On today's episode of Born to Know, I'm joined by Dr. Jack Cruz, a world-renowned neurosurgeon and trailblazer in the field of circadian biology, light therapy, and environmental health. He's an essential pattern disruptor of the centralized medical system and has helped thousands of people all over the world achieve better health and disease reversal through his methods and transformative blueprint. He's been pivotal in reshaping national policy by collaborating with Robert Kennedy Jr., the Maha Movement, and President of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele. Our conversation today hits a lot of hot-button issues, from the truth about our fertility crisis to why autism numbers have risen from 1 in 100,000 to 1 in 36 in only 40 years' time. And the culprit is not what you're thinking. This is a mind-blowing conversation, and as always, thank you for being here and being part of the Born to Know family. Hey, Dr. Cruz, thank you for being here. It is an honor and a pleasure. I am super stoked for this conversation. I mentioned to you earlier when we were chatting that my 9-year-old daughter had a lot of questions about the brain and surgery, tools, twilight sleep, you name it. A lot of questions I could not answer, of course. However, one thing she really, really wanted to know that she was super excited about was what inspired you to work with the brain and to become a surgeon of the brain. And also, based on what I shared about you, she wanted to know, when did you realize things were not as they seem? In this house, we talk a lot about what's behind the curtain, what's another possibility, what's available to us that we haven't seen yet. So we get really curious. So I would love to know the story behind that.
Yeah, I decided to be a doctor when I was 4 years old, fell off my couch playing with a matchbox car, got a cut on my chin. My mother took me to the doctor, and they sewed me up, and I watched them in a mirror do what they were doing to me. And I told my mother right then and there that I was going to do this when I grew up. That's how it happened. She responded just like I think any mother. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, you're going to want to do 20 different things, but it turned out it was either that or play professional sports. And should have went to play professional sports, but my mother talked me out of that. That's a totally different story, but I never wavered. I didn't want to be anything else the whole time I was a kid.
And so through your arc and going through medical school and residency and all of your experiences in our conventional medical framework, like, when was that moment that you said there's more to this than I can see?
Well, it's medicine. Medicine, centralized medicine, creates a lot of wounds, and it doesn't create a lot of wisdom, especially in doctors. So after being out of residency for, you know, 5 to 10 years, I started to realize that most of what I was told wasn't really working for the people that were coming to see me. And then magically something happened to me, and I retapped into the centralized medical program, asked them what I should do. They told me the same thing that I learned in med school. I did it. It didn't work. In fact, it got worse. So then I sat down and started to think about what Einstein said. If you keep doing the same shit over and over again and you think you're going to get a different result and you don't, that's called insanity. So then the real come to Jesus moment happened very soon after that, where I was given a talk in Birmingham, Alabama, and something happened to me. And that's when it dawned on me that maybe the whole paradigm is wrong. Somebody was important in stimulating that, an orthopedic surgeon's wife who gave me a book called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari and 6 papers. And what was she trying to tell me? She was trying to tell me something that that I think most people in the Maha movement would probably get behind, that big pharma was the big issue and you need to really expose them. But I actually took it a completely different way. The book that she gave me was probably more germane than the papers, because it showed me that the cue to change was actually in the environment. And the environment is not something that centralized medicine focuses on. It focuses on the problems inside of you. They tell you that you're the problem. And it turns out the way we're actually built by nature is we have these colony of mitochondria, which is a separate genome than the nuclear genome. The nuclear genome is where DNA and RNA is. Centralized medicine and big pharma focus on that genome. Turns out decentralized medicine focuses on the other genome. And the other genome is created only by 37 genes. And all of them, 13 out of the 37, have to do with energy transformation from the sun and also from the magnetic flux on the ground. And that's the basis of all life on the planet through all three domains. So I decided to focus in on that genome about 20 years ago.
Yeah. So as you were moving through this conventional framework, which is what a lot of people say in the world of birth and obstetrics and all fields of medicine, is that it's something from within, right? It's like the woman's fault, like her body has this disposition and this is why it's happening, hardly ever focusing on her relationship to the environment, her habits, lifestyle. Like it's always this, or it's you're just a victim of your genetics, right? And there's nothing that can be done.
With women, the story is a little bit different because women are different than men. It turns out that that mitochondrial genome only pays attention to the mom. Why is that? Because mitochondrial genomics is only maternal. So I will tell you that women are far more important in this story than men are. That's not something that you get from centralized medicine. They treat men and women actually the same. But the reason why this is important, most people know about Mendel and Darwin and autosomal dominant and autosomal recessive. But here's the interesting thing. We have certain diseases like mitochondrial diseases where the disease shows up mostly in boys and not girls. And this has caused a huge conundrum, you know, in OBGYN, medical genetics. And the guy that brought this to light 50 years ago is Doug Wallace. Doug Wallace is the world expert in mitochondrial diseases. But the classic disease that everybody's talking about right now because they want to ascribe it to vaccines is autism. And what people don't seem to realize is that autism has a mitochondrial inheritance. So autism is predominantly found in first-born men. It's much more common now. The other issue about it that's very, very interesting that also points to a mitochondrial origin is I think Nicole Shanahan's done a really good job with Bobby Kennedy elucidating that in 1989, autism incidence and prevalence is but 1 in 100,000. Today it's now 1 in 36 in certain places like New Jersey and Orange County. The problem is most people argue, you know, about what the etiology is. Actually, to be honest with you, when you have the mindset that decentralized medicine has, the etiology is obvious. It's a defect in mitochondrial DNA. It's tied to a mutation. Now, Doug Wallace has done the hard and heavy lifting of this. He's actually linked autism to a specific mitochondrial abnormality. And that abnormality, it turns out, can be affected by a lot of different things. And what is his thesis around disease management? If you alter energy production through that mutation, you get a disease. This is the reason why autism is on a spectrum. Why? Because if you get it really bad, you have severe autism. If you don't have it that bad and you're able to create enough energy from the environment you're in, you get a very mild, like an Asperger's type. And then there's other remnants of that where you actually get increased what we call savant behavior neurologically in some of these kids. And then we have the ones that are completely non-responsive because their neurulation and their thalamus doesn't work at all because of the way the thalamus responds in utero. The interesting part of this story, if you understand anything about mitochondria, is mitochondria are light-driven organelles and cells. So what does that mean by definition? And this is where the story gets a little bit complicated, but when I talked to Nicole Shanahan a couple of years ago and told her that her perspective about autism was completely wrong, you know, through her daughter's exposure, Nicole's story is very interesting. She had a normal kid. Her and Sergey Brin had the baby, Echo. And she noticed when she got the MMR vaccine, immediately the autism showed up. So, of course, many women have this issue. So everybody immediately blames the vaccine. And I proceeded to tell Nicole that that may not be the case, that the vaccine may be the lever, but the thing that set the problem was her germline. So this goes directly to the point you were trying to make earlier that, oh, we want to tell women the problems in them. Well, in this case, it is. It's in your mitochondrial DNA germline. And you have to know a little bit about Doug Wallace's work to make sense of this. And centralized medicine has done a really bad job of this. And I would even tell you the people in MAHA have done a horrible job with this because they don't understand the basics. So when I explained to Nicole this process, I wrote a blog for her, actually for her daughter. And I told her that the abuse through technology that she's been through actually ruined her mitochondrial genome before Echo was even born. So in other words, she had higher heteroplasmy when the baby came out. The vaccine was the lever that pushed her over the issue. In other words, the baby didn't have autism until another mitochondrial toxin was added to the mix. But remember, this is like the story of the straw that broke the camel's back. What's the last straw? So people in the autism space have recency bias. Why? Because the number one thing that affects kids that's most recent is the vaccine schedule. Why? Because that's what pediatricians push when a kid's born. But what you need to know is that the germline is the real problem. Now, why is this story important for people to get? It fully explains how you went from 1 in 100,000 to 1 in 36. Why? Because if you remember, in 1986, 1989, it was a zero-G world. The only thing we had was the power grid, and we had things that plugged into it. No one had cell phones. No one had screens. So we went from zero-G to 5G, literally, in 25 to 40 years, which is the reason why autism has gone from 1 in 100,000 to 1 in 36 in different places. Now, remember, the electromagnetic footprint of everybody's zip code is different. Now, how does this scale to the biology? How do you know that I might be right about this? What did I say to Nicole that actually started to change her opinion? I told her the story of mitochondrial haplotype. When we started off as a species, doesn't matter how you believe it happened, whether it's evolution or through, you know, creationism, that's immaterial. The thing that we do know is that the human race started with L0, 1, 2, and 3 haplotypes. These are all equatorial, highly coupled. From those, that coupling efficiency, we radiated all over the planet. Everybody knows that humans moved. We went to Asia. We went to Europe. We went to North America. We radiated all over the world. So what happened? The electromagnetic footprint of that environment as we radiated changed the L0, L1, and L2 haplotype. So then we got U. Then we got M. Then M was Northern European, but it migrated to Australia. The point I'm trying to make to you is haplotypes eventually changed when people migrated to different parts of the world. And that this is where you get the idea of epigenetic permanence, meaning that when your haplotypes changes from L0 to, say, U, it's because your people have been located in that spot for 20 or 30,000 years, which is, you know, what we would call 15, 20, 30 generations. So what is Doug Wallace brought to the table? Doug Wallace's science has pointed out that haplotypes are related to geography, to latitude and longitude. What's the next generation that I bring to the table? Latitude and longitude are a variance in the electromagnetic footprint. Why? Everybody knows if you live in Norway compared to, say, where I am in El Salvador, light right now at the end of February is really good here. Light in Norway sucks. So what does that tell you? There's a different electromagnetic footprint here than there is there. That is codified in your haplotype. So Northern Europeans have uncoupled haplotypes. People that live inside the tropics tend to have more coupled haplotypes. So what happens when you come to, say, the 20th century and you get airplanes and you get trains and you get the ability to move wherever you want? Well, the first warning shot that autism is a possibility is actually what circadian jet lag is. It's a mismatch. When you fly east or west against this, most people have experienced jet lag. Well, that's exactly what's going on with autism in the germline. So that means the cells that are in your ovary, and this is also a difference for women, women are born with every single egg they'll ever have. Men don't get any of their sperm until they go through puberty. This is a unique thing to women. So what does that mean? It means the egg that you became, Eula, it was first effectively programmed by your grandmother. Why? Because the egg you became was in your mother when she was inside your mother. So that means your grandmother's electromagnetic experience actually not only sculpted you, but it sculpted your mother. If you think about this from a teleologic sense, it makes total sense. Why? Because women are special. They have to sense the environment in order to select the correct egg for the environment that is out there so that the baby has the highest likelihood to survive. What pathway controls all of these things? It's called the leptin-melanocortin pathway. Now, nature is really, really telling us something here, because that same pathway also controls growth, appetite, and satiety. So you have to realize fertility, fecundity, actually linked directly to the energy transformation. And what is food? It's also an electromagnetic barcode of where the Earth is in relation to the planet. So this whole story is electromagnetic. So what has happened, say, from, I would say, 1893, when Tesla created the AC power grid in, you know, the World's Fair? Everything changed. And what happened? We have the first reports of Alzheimer's disease in the literature in 1911. Then what happens? The first paper for autism shows up in 1940. Most people, I think, know in 1940 that, you know, there wasn't a lot of vaccines around at that time. So that should clue you in that the vaccine story is a much later event. Did autism speed up quicker? Yeah. And it does look, if you look at Bobby Kennedy's timeline, that it corresponds to the 1986 law with autism. But what Bobby forgets and what Nicole forgot is what I reminded them. It also completely coincides with when everybody started using cell phones and screens. And it turns out light sculpts everything on the planet. If you don't believe me, you cannot have the food web without sunlight. And the same thing is true with people. And it turns out the big part of the story here is we now live in a world that has a ton of electromagnetic pollution. And what does that do to female germlines? It raises the heteroplasmy rate in the wrong places. And then when the baby is born, if something else happens to it that also affects its energy production, then a new disease can manifest right away. This is the reason why the story that centralized doctors hear from moms that Nicole said, hey, I gave my kid an MMR shot and all of a sudden the kid went from, you know, completely normal to, you know, ape-like, or didn't talk, didn't have any sensory integration. This atavistic effect, we're going backwards. And it sounds crazy to the centralized pediatricians and OBGYNs. Why? Because they don't understand truly the work of Doug Wallace. What does Doug Wallace say? Doug Wallace says that chronic diseases can show up out of the ether. All you have to do is alter mitochondrial DNA by introducing mutations. And this is the crazy part of the story. Nuclear DNA is very stable, but mitochondrial DNA mutates at a 1,000-fold rate higher. This is the reason why, when we introduce mitochondrial toxins to the environment, that we have all the chronic diseases that modern man has. This is the reason why, in recent podcasts, why I've broken away from Maha, why I've broken away from Bobby. I wouldn't say I've broken away from Nicole. Her and I are still pretty tight. But my mindset, I'm completely clinically based. I believe MAHA is mostly pseudoscientific because it focuses in on the wrong things, specifically, you know, food and exercise and, you know, processed food. Processed food you can easily avoid. It's not a big problem. But when you're mandating messenger RNA jabs through the schedule, and this is, you know, included for you to go to school, to go to different places and things like that, that's where I have to draw the line. And that's where I think we've made a mistake. And, you know, when you think about the platform that Bobby and Nicole ran on, all of us thought that that would be taken care of right away. The bottom line that MAHA didn't do, they never explained the base case that I explained to you right now in terms of how mitochondrial mutations are affected by electromagnetism. That's the reason we have haplotypes. It's the reason why we have haplotype variation as we move all over the planet, which tells you that EMF has a huge impact on life. The EMF that sculpted the haplotypes was native, meaning terrestrial, normal. What happened after 1893? We added artificial man-made polarized ones that sped up all the diseases that we all know about now. Cancer, autism, neurodegeneration, heart disease, you name the condition, mental illness, all of them are tied to this same base case. And I have made that case for 20 years. And what do? I take each individual disease out and then give you a quantum explanation of why it happens. Why? Because mitochondrial DNA only concerns itself with energy production. And when you mention the word energy, it always brings up that guy with the funny hair, E equals MC squared. That's Einstein. And you have to remember, when you scale back to that, you have to realize that we have created a world now that's designed to steal energy from humans. That's what we're doing right now on technology. That's the reason I'm outside doing this podcast and you're inside. You're making a catastrophic mistake by putting that thing in your ear and being inside. The reason why? It's stealing energy from your brain. People don't realize when you make this error, you know, over 50 or 60 years, it should be no shock why people are getting neurodegeneration, why they're getting dementia now in their 40s and 50s. When I was your age, no one used those things in their ear. That didn't come until the Sony Walkman. And the thing is, it's getting worse and worse and worse. The same thing is happening with multiple diseases. These days, there's people younger than you showing up into our office with carotid disease, with the inability to think. Dementia is going down. We're now seeing fit athletes that play soccer drop dead on a field, you know, after they've taken the jab. The reason for that is the spike protein, as we just found out from the Yale study, is really now a permanent thing. Why? Because they're genetically modified by the platform. So that means the spike protein constantly affects their mitochondria in different places. Now, what determines where the spike protein goes? That's the very interesting story, because the spike protein in the platform is encoded in something called a liquid nanoparticle. That actually blocks the charge. So what does it mean? It tends to go to things that create an electromagnetic footprint. What is that in your body? Mitochondria. It creates electric fields because of the inner mitochondrial membrane, and it has a spinning FO head for the ATPase that creates a magnetic field. We know this now. Why? And we can prove it. You've had the experience when you go to the doctor, they put an EKG machine on your heart, and we see these fancy lines. That's the electrical and magnetic deflections of your heart. We have fancy machines in neurosurgery that I use called MEG machines that check magnetic field. I can check your magnetic field out of your brain or your heart. Last time I checked it on somebody in their heart, it was 22 feet out of their chest. This is the reason when we make love, we make babies, we tend to do it face to face. Why? Because we're trying to get inside that magnetic field. The same thing is true in the brain. When someone has a TBI, we can put a magnet over their head without cutting their brain open and send magnetic flux into the brain to try to help them heal. And the mitochondria in that area go through a process called apoptosis and autophagy. So we don't realize in centralized medicine truly how the system functions. And this is the reason why we're impotent to fix the chronic disease epidemic out there. And what I see going on in our country now definitely an improvement from where we were prior to Bobby. But most of the people that, you know, Trump has placed around Bobby, how shall I say this kindly, are going to dumb the science down.
This just got me thinking about, well, many things, but one is this kind of like train stop that women go through in their process, right? So they have the environmental factors, they have all of the information from their mother's experience or grandmother's experience and so on down the maternal line. When they get to that conception point and they enter the system, right? Because most women need to confirm their pregnancy rather than just letting the body show them that they're pregnant. They need medicine or they need the system to confirm it.
That's a mistake. That's the first mistake modern humans make. But there's no reason to do that if you're living truly in nature. Now, the reason that women do this is because they've been conditioned by the centralized system to do that. See, that's the wallet biopsy of the OBGYNs or the wallet biopsy of the geneticists or, you know, the wallet biopsy that the hospital gets because they want to convince you that you need to have a baby in the hospital as opposed to doing it in a pool in your house. I try to remind people that, you know, prior to 500-600 years ago, we had no hospitals yet. There's 8 billion of us on the planet. Now, to show you that, you know, natural childbirth actually works. Nature's a pretty good, you know, experimental lab. The problem is we've gotten in the way with our beliefs, and our beliefs have been born around the curriculums at medical schools that were born from the Flexner Report when Rockefeller tried to change the whole system to move us away from doing the things that wild animals do. If a woman misses her period 2 or 3 months, she knows what's coming. Now, if you want to do an EPT test at home and pee on it, I'm fine with that. But I'll be honest with you. Assuming that you live in a pretty good place and that you got pregnant, that's a pretty good sign that you got pregnant, that nature's okay with it. The real problem, the people that really need to consider centralized healthcare are the ones that have sex for a whole year with no protection and can't get pregnant, or the ones that took birth control pills for 10 or 20 years and can't get pregnant. Guess what? Nature's trying to tell you something, that you probably have no business having a baby until you get your environment cleaned up. But guess what? That's not the message the OBGYNs give. Instead, they say, go see my friend who's a fertility doctor and we're going to put you on Clomid, and you'll have 19 babies, and some of them will have problems, but you'll still have a baby because you're forcing nature to do something it shouldn't do. And this is also the reason, at the same time autism has gone through the roof, the epidemic of infertility is even worse. But nobody seems to put these two stories together, and it turns out that these two things are fundamentally linked.
I mean, that first visit, she enters what I call the fear grid based on clinical logic, legal logic, cultural logic at this point, because it's become culture to participate with the system in that way and do the dance. So she gets her first ultrasound. And this is what I wanted to ask you, because there's, you know, there is all the train stations that a woman will go through until she gets to her medicalized birth. But those ultrasounds, right? I'm looking for something. I don't know what I'm looking for, but it's kind of like the proverbial, you know, monster in the closet. We're just waiting for it to appear. How does ultrasound wave technology impact the formation of the fetus, the brain?
It depends what you use it for. I would tell you the chronic use of ultrasound is a problem because of what we know about the physics of water. It also is a problem based on what we know about the morphology of organisms. Now, centralized medicine has done a really bad job on the morphology side. I'd have to get like doctors to go back and read Alan Turing's paper in 1941, where he linked mathematics to morphology, to really get them to understand my perspective. So that's why I don't talk about it too much on podcasts. But suffice to say, ultrasounds definitely affect morphology. Now, the water chemistry story is pretty well worked out. I have zero problems with OBGYNs using ultrasound to size the baby. The number one issue that you want to use ultrasound for, can the baby's head fit out the vagina? That is a huge problem, today. Why? Because OBGYNs will blame their C-section rates on that mismatch. My belief is that is what they blame it on. They really do it for comfort and for their own scheduling issues, not for women. And women need to know that. So if you have a reliance on ultrasound, you're almost guaranteeing that you're going to have a C-section. And C-sections also happen to be different in different locations. You'll find out in rural areas, they're less than what they are in cities. And this is really because of the scheduling issues with OBGYNs. So water chemistry tends to decrease two things. They have, I'd like to call them synonyms, but they're really not. But for sake of this argument, because I'm going to assume most of your people are not really up on water chemistry science well, something called the exclusion zone. A guy named Jerry Pollack talked about this in a book from 2013. It's not accurate, but it's good acronym to use. It decreases the exclusion zone. What does that mean for women? It means that it decreases the amount of light energy that can be buried in water. Well, if you think about a baby, when they're born, they're 80% water. And then what do they float in? The amniotic sac, which is also an ultrafiltrate of water from your blood plasma. So this is a problem. So you realize that you're stealing energy every time you put an ultrasound on your belly. So you don't want to do it often. Am I okay doing it once to make sure the baby's developing okay? Yeah, but I think OBGYNs these days use it too much. The more accurate biophysical term is that it decreases the coherent domain of water. What does that mean in English? It means it limits the amount of electrons that water can have split out of it. And if you know anything about energy and health, the word that you usually hear doctors use is inflammation. What patients don't understand is inflammation is a logarithmic scale of protons. That's a positive charge. So the higher the positive charge, that's what inflammation is. What is the net negative charge? That's wellness. So the more electrons you make, the healthier you are. So how do you get a healthy pregnancy? By having as many electrons as possible. That means you want a lot of coherent domains, which is the reason why women, when they're pregnant, if you draw their blood, you'll notice that their blood volume increases tremendously. Why? They have way more water. They actually get a version of heart failure that's normal in pregnancy. And they dilute their own blood because instead of having 93% of their blood volume water, it goes up even higher. And it also turns out that they need that water for the baby as well because there's a huge increase in water content. All of that is fostered by the hormones of pregnancy. The number one is called progesterone. What does progestation mean? Means that you start to retain huge amounts of water. And it turns out water is an electromagnetic capacitor. And what did I tell you before? From photosynthesis. All things grow from light. Well, it turns out we're just like plants, except we're a little bit more complicated. But we have the same processes going in on us. So water is a big part of the pregnancy story. So realize that ultrasounds, chronically, if there's a reliance on them, it's an issue. I'm not here to tell you that, you know, if a child is found to have hydrocephalus in utero, that you don't want to do something about that, then you're going to need more ultrasounds. In other words, the problem's found. But most pregnancies do not have those problems. Now, we also said that today in the modern world, if you live in a city, the chance of you having a baby with a problem is much higher than it is if you're truly living in nature. Right now, most modern women don't live in nature. Otherwise, 50% of them wouldn't be infertile. So you have to realize that that's a big issue. Do I also think that if you're using IVF to get pregnant, then you do need, by my definition, then you do need to rely more on centralized medicine to make sure that pregnancy can go all the way through. Are you more likely with a manufactured pregnancy to have a C-section? Correct. Is it more high risk? Yes. In fact, when I was in medical school, we used to consider any woman over the age of 30 a high-risk pregnancy. Today, the numbers moved up, I think, to 40. I would tell you because of electromagnetic pollution, I think the number should be actually 25. So that makes me a real outlier. And I think part of the reason that we don't do that is because fertility medicine, when I was training way back when 40 years ago, no one needed it. it was very, very rare because no one had problems. Remember, this predated screens, cell phones, and electromagnetic pollution. The only pollution that we really had at that time was the AC power grid and the things we plugged into it. Today, that's completely flipped. And that's why I told you that it mimics not only C-section rates, but it mimics autism rate, and it actually mimics all the chronic diseases that we see. But nobody in centralized medicine has realized that that's the main driver. And when you sit down with smart people and you tell them that human evolution, human fertility, human fecundity, and actually your growth throughout your adult life is all tied to this leptin melanocortin pathway. And I always tell them, everybody knows leptin is in your fat mass. Everybody forgets the melano part is tied to melanin, not only on the outside, but on the inside. And it turns out melanin actually protects you from electromagnetic pollution. But remember, we have our friends in ophthalmology and dermatology telling women constantly to stay out of the sun and not make melanin. So what does that do? That actually is a prescription for infertility. So when you actually think about, you know, what you said, when women stepped into the centralized paradigm, you don't even realize from the time they're little girls, they've been putting that shit all over their bodies. That started their infertility story when you really understand the basics. And then the cultural problems is the last time little girls usually ran out outside without a shirt on is when they were 6 years old. That's also a problem. That actually tells you why we've got the breast cancer story we have now. It's also where the infertility is, because remember where your ovaries are, parts of your body that rarely get exposed. And all of these things add up. And then when you consider that we're living really in cities now, they're probably more apt to be described as Chernobyl when it comes to, you know, fertility and health, you begin to understand why we have this big problem. But this sounds like hyperbole to people who don't understand the base case that I made to you earlier about Doug Wallace's work with mitochondrial DNA, and understanding that mitochondrial mutations that affect energy create diseases. And when you replace the energy back by doing things you should do, these diseases magically go away. It sounds crazy until you actually really parse his workout. And some of the stuff that he's done, it's stunning what you can do. You can actually make diseases that doctors think are incurable magically go away.
Magically. Yeah. It sounds like that to people because it feels so impossible based on everything that they're taught from such a young age.
They're taught centralized ideas. That's the reason why. Remember, the centralized ideas manifest because the centralized ideas manifest because those are the things that bring the centralized paradigm money. That's what it always comes down to.
Well, yeah, it's like you mentioned siphoning energy. I mean, that is a metaphor for so many relationships and dynamics that exist on Earth, right? But I wonder, like, people want to demonize, vilify doctors, right? And very often, like in the, you know, alternative communities where it's like there's this nefarious agenda. I actually don't believe there's any nefarious agenda behind the individual itself, because the goal is health, right? It's just your colleagues, right? Trained in a system that is being puppeteered by someone else. You know, I don't know who that is. I doubt that I'll ever get exposure to who that is really. But people say, well, what's the point? You know, yes, they're making more money. Pharma's making more money. Institutions, you know, big food, all the, you know, agro making more money. But really, like, above that, like, what is being siphoned? What is the end goal? You know, and people say, like, you know, we're energy slaves, right? And through this system.
It's control and money. That's what it's comes down to. And, you know, when you say that you don't understand who's behind it or never will, it's obvious. It started with the Flexner Report. It's the Rockefellers. Remember, these are the same people tied to the Federal Reserve. If you want to know why science has been stolen, why centralized medicine exists, it is because of bad money. And bad money means that they need to create ways to get money. So it's much better for you to be a patient and use all their bullshit solutions that don't work over 70, 80 years. And each train stop you have in your life, there's a new set of circumstances where they can harvest you as an economic slave. And how is this codified? Like, what's the code that allows doctors to be idiots? It's very simple. It's the medical school curriculum. Who sets the medical school curriculum? Big Pharma. They pay for the entire thing. The reason why doctors only learn a certain amount is because if you knew any more, you'd knew not to do what Big Pharma taught you to do in medicine, in medical school or residency. And that's kind of ties to, you know, my come to Jesus moment. My come to Jesus moment was reading a fable called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. If you want to know the truth, there was more truth in that fable than there was in my medical school curriculum. That's actually what got me back on path when I started to realize that I have to be into question all the things that I was taught. And this is where I would tell you where doctors are complicit. If you go through life seeing all this shit go around you and don't question what you're doing, then I'm going to tell you, you are complicit with the Big Pharma grift that's going on. See, I don't think I can give doctors a pass like you do. Why? There's going to come a period of time in every doctor's life where you just look at your practice and go, why is it, you know, if you're an OBGYN, that literally 50% of women that come in can't get pregnant? Like, has that ever happened prior to the literature of 1970? The answer is no, it didn't. So why wouldn't a doctor question that? Well, you know why? Because no doctors go back and read the literature from 1970. And if you're a new doctor now, you're certainly not going to get taught that by Big Pharma, because if you were, you'd ask too many good questions so that you wouldn't push people down to the IVF drugs like Clomid. And that is the reason why this happens. So ultimately, the job of a doctor is to do, you know, what I'd call post-residency training. Don't you think Big Pharma is actually controlling that as well? Doctors have mandated CMEs that they have to do. Do you know what the CMEs are in? In shit that you don't need to know. Why do they do that specifically? So that you never read The Monk who Stole His Ferrari. So that you never read other things that may actually help your patients. It's the same reason Obamacare gave us the electronic medical record. Why? Because the electronic medical record allows us to focus on the computer for the hospital system and not the patient. What does it do? It subtracts time so that you can't ask the patient the questions that may actually help you become enlightened. So I would submit to you that I reject your premise. I think every doctor is complicit in this, whether it's direct or indirect. And I think when they hear this, they'll probably be pissed off at me, but I could care less. Why? I was ignorant up until the time I was 40 years old. But even at 40 years old, I realized that the things that I was taught to do weren't working for all the diseases that I was treating. And after I had my own issue, I said, well, since I gave crazy a try with me, why shouldn't I give crazy a try with patients to see if this works? And guess what? That is how JackCruz.com was born. What's important for this story is for people to understand that when you enter a relationship, especially when it's around fertility, having a baby, or even the questions later, like why is it that babies are getting more jaundice when they're born? Those are the kind of questions you need to ask. Or here's another one. Why is it that doctors tell pregnant women not to eat seafood, especially raw seafood? Why is it that no one talks about breastfeeding as much as they should when you're pregnant? Why is it that all women have to take prenatal vitamins? I mean, was there prenatal vitamins around when the Egyptians were here? You know, why is B12 associated, you know, with some of the things that is? Why it's in prenatal vitamins? Why is there caudal regression syndromes today when we didn't really have that in the past? Like, these are the questions you need to ask. Or when you learn about chorionic villi sampling and say, why is my OBGYN suggesting that I get this done? Those are the kind of questions that I think women need to answer. Or, you know, my favorite one is, we put women on B12 But why don't we ever check their vitamin D level in their first trimester? When we know that the baby is going to steal all the mother's vitamin D, doesn't it mean if the woman is below 30 that she's going to come out with a much lower number because it's going to be spun into the baby? Same thing with the DHA level. So if you're not eating to replace the things that your baby's taking away from you, does that make any sense? No, I'm going to tell you that's a preconditioned set of circumstances that the paradigm is put in. Why? Because then it makes you, the mom, and the baby a client postnatally. And this is the reason why we're now seeing huge amounts of postpartum depression. This is the reason why babies have colic. Is it normal for a baby to have colic? Only when the baby has circadian mismatches. Is it normal for a baby to be jaundiced? No. Only when they have circadian mismatches. Is it normal to put a baby who's jaundiced under a blue light? No. We never did that when the Egyptians were out there. Is it normal for women in New York City to be more common to have a C-section than have a live birth through their vagina? No, that's not normal. Those are the questions that people need to start to ask. And when you find that the doctors cannot give you cogent answers, that's when you need to start realizing you need to do your own homework. And then you come to this little nugget. Once you ask enough questions, you'll come across probably my Twitter feed, and I'll point out to you that doctors are the third leading cause of death. And it's not Jack Cruz's opinion. It's actually the Institutes of Medicine that showed that over 15 years ago. So then you got to start to ask yourself, well, if they're the third leading cause of death, could some of the things that they've told me while I've been pregnant or postnatally, should I believe everything they tell me? That's the whole point of being a mitochondriac. It's the point of never settling for less than you deserve. And that should be easier these days. Why? Because doctors have probably lost more trust in the last 4 or 5 years than anyone else. We don't deserve your trust if you want to know the truth. We didn't protect you from the government as we should have the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm going to tell you everything when it comes to fertility, everything when it comes to having a baby, everything that happens postnatally. You should not trust the people that you're using, and you should do your own homework. And the way you do that is by remaining curious and keep asking questions and keep pushing the envelope. And if you become difficult, so be it. But the bottom line is, when you have a baby and that baby's out, that baby is the single most important thing for you to take care of. You'll hear Elon Musk talk about artificial intelligence. I'm not interested in his version of artificial intelligence. What comes out of your vagina is nature's artificial intelligence. It's a little bit of daddy, a little bit of mommy, and then it's an alien that does things its own way. And you get to take care of that alien for 18 to 25 years and sculpt it. But remember, that baby's not like you, and it's not like your husband. It is a combination not only of your nuclear genes, but it's a big-time combination of those mitochondrial genes, and you have the ability to sculpt those genes, not only when you're pregnant, but even after you're pregnant. That means that you can change the direction of your child's life. The trajectory changes, and you need to know that that's the case. That's also something that the pediatricians and the OBGYNs don't really tell you. And what do they tell you? They tell you things that limit the trajectory. So if you don't give your moms raw seafood and seafood during pregnancy, you're not going to have a big brain. And this is something I will tell you. This will be controversial. Pediatricians and OBGYNs are usually in the middle to the bottom of their class. Neurosurgeons are on the top of the class. We know a lot about brains and making them. I'm going to tell you, you need to have a lot of DHA to make a good brain. So if an OBGYN or a pediatrician tells you not to eat those things, I would strongly recommend you do your own homework and read some of the work of Michael Crawford or Stephen Cunane about human brain evolution. And you'll find out that the things that are in the marine seafood chain are about the best things you can eat when you're making a baby brain.
So in this decentralization process that a woman and man might start going through, right? They want to conceive, they got together, or they're just discovering it after they've conceived. They're starting to become autonomous, self-sovereign.
I think it starts before that. I think when you sit down and you're having a relationship with somebody, you have to get your light environment correct. That means man and woman. And if the man truly loves the woman, he needs to sit down with her just like you do before you get married, but before you have a discussion with the rabbi, a priest, or whomever else. What are we going to do to have a good baby? Are we going to have babies? If you're not going to have babies, you can throw this discussion out. But if we're going to have babies, we got to make sure that mommy's not working at night. Mommy's working and spending enough time outside. Mommy's vitamin D is above 60 nanograms per milliliter higher before mommy has a baby. Why? Because that's what decentralized science says is important to making babies and making good baby brains and making good baby bodies. Okay? That needs to happen first and foremost. Then the things that you wanted to bring in come in. Like, you cannot build the third and fourth floor of a baby's body plan if you don't have a good blueprint. Remember, that blueprint is sitting in your ovary and sitting in his sack. And you need to do a good job. So if he's putting the cell phone next to his sack and you're putting the laptop on your lap, no, you're not ready to have a baby, according to me.
Yeah, absolutely. What does a decentralized, like, so for me, I remember my daughter, I had her in a Waldorf, part-time school. They're always outside. They would go inside just to bake, but they were mostly gardening and knitting outside and all that. It was important for me to, for her to stay in this natural biological rhythm, right? And kids at that age, every 20 minutes, they're shifting activities, right? They're not meant to sit at a little desk and stare at a wall under fluorescent lighting for 7 hours a day. So for her, she was in this natural biological rhythm. And whenever a kid would get, quote, sick, you know, a cold or something like that, I wouldn't keep her home. I'd like, go talk to the kid. Don't treat him like a pariah. You know, spend time with them. You know, just be outside, play with the dirt, eat the dirt, eat the sand. So I had deconditioned myself a long time ago. For her now, like now that she's in these environments, she feels like she's going to rip outside of her body if she spends more than like a half hour inside. Not because she needs to, like, she can't focus, simply because she needs to be under the sun or outside. And she's finding it harder and harder to find other children who, you know, aren't on an Apple Watch, aren't on a screen, aren't talking about Taylor Swift. And it feels like a lonely world for her, right? So she actually just ends up, you know, attaching to animals or nature. I wonder, you know, how do women find that courage to decentralize themselves? Because for me, it was a lone journey. I just was like, I don't know who's going to be there on the other side, but I'm going to do it.
I don't think it's courage. I actually think it's curiosity. It's like this. Would you be okay taking your kid into Walmart and getting the shit kicked out of him? No, but you're okay putting your kid in a school where they're in front of screens and Wi-Fi for 8 to 10 hours a day. It's the same process. Remember, when you get beat up, you get a TBI. Effectively, what non-native EMF causes to your brain is a TBI. So you're actually doing the same thing, except you don't have bruises when you use technology. And when you actually think about it like that, then you realize, remember, you're not designed to be their friend. You're designed to be their parent. So you have to protect your child. Like, you're not going to let a kid that doesn't swim go next to a pool without floaties. Same way you're not going to let them go to the beach, you know, when there's big waves and they're not good swimmers. I would say to you, this is like common sense. But the fact that you're telling me it's not common sense tells me that almost everybody's low dopamine. Why? Because of all the things that I talked about with screen technology on the Danny Jones podcast with people. People don't realize that when your dopamine and melatonin levels have been stolen by the things you're most addicted to, which is technology. Remember, technology is what brings us inside. Like I mentioned it to you. You're inside now doing this and I'm outside. So I'm even trying to give you the lesson during the podcast that, no, I don't care if the audio and the video is not good enough. What I think is the most important thing in podcasting is actually, are you getting a message through to the audience that actually resonates? When they hear it, do they go, shit, that really, I never thought about that this way. To me, that's what really matters. And if somebody says to you, well, I thought the audio or visual quality were good, you know what you should do? eliminate them from your audience. Like, just hit the delete button, say, God, see ya. It's the same story I'm trying to tell you now with kids. You need to focus in on what's the most important thing with kids. What people don't do, and when I say people, I'm going to talk about pediatricians, OBGYNs, and parents now. You don't realize, as a brain surgeon, your brain is not fully myelinated till 25 years old. Myelin actually protects you from electromagnetic pollution. So what effectively were we doing by putting kids into school with screens and Wi-Fi? Remember, they don't use books anymore. You're actually putting them in Chernobyl. So how about you focus in on that instead of worrying about all the bullshit, you know, that you've been told? That is like a huge issue. And then if you give your kid a digital babysitter, like an iPhone or an iPad when they're little, I mean, to me, that is ultimate child abuse. And this is not hyperbole. There's now books out about this that you can read. And the thing is, I think you have to be a champion for your child and understand that, yes, having a kid is time consuming. It's a pain in the ass. It's not for everybody, but if you decide to have them, my belief, and this is going to be a tough one for people, I believe one parent needs to stay home, okay, and take care of the kids. I think this whole idea of having both parents work doesn't make any sense at all. And I think that's an idea that we actually got from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, but it's also tied to this paradigm of bad money, bad thinking, low dopamine, low melatonin. When kids have a mommy and daddy and they learn both from the mommy and daddy different things, the child is more well-rounded and ready, you know, to tackle the world they're coming into. Now, the world today is radically different than when I came through it. And I do think that children today, they are suffering from not having a nuclear family. I think they're also suffering because the teachers that are teaching them also have this woke ideology. The things the kids are being taught are not things that probably should be taught in school. They should be taught at home. If you believe, you know, that it's okay for boys and girls to pee in the same bathroom, great. Teach your kid that at home, but that shouldn't be taught in the schools because that's not how it's supposed to be. And the thing is, I have told my members that I think if I was actively having babies now, there is no question that I would homeschool my children. Actually, when I did have my kids, my wife did not work. I told her, you're going to stay home with the babies. We can do this, and I want you to take care of them. And to me, that is a job that's actually more important than my job as a neurosurgeon. And I think if you go into life and you don't have a good plan about how to care for your kids, and you both know that you have to work, realize that right off the bat, you've actually done something bad to your children. Like, if you have to put them in daycare, you have to do this. And I know this is going to upset people when they hear it. I'm sorry. I just don't think that's the best choice for the kid. I understand you may want to have a baby, but I believe if you're going to have a kid, don't give it a C, a D, or a B life. Give it an A life. Give it the best chance that you can get. And am I a little bit flexible on that? Yeah, I am. I think that there's different times and different places to do it. But that means, no, you probably shouldn't live in New York City. You shouldn't live in Chicago. You shouldn't live in LA because it's more expensive to live there. Go live in a place that's less population dense. You know, you can have the time. Mommy and daddy can spend time with the babies to teach them so that you don't have to put them, you know, in these crazy schools. Do I think the kids need to spend outside time? Do they need to go to the beach? Do they need to be outside playing in the sun, riding their bikes? Yeah. And if the kids don't get that, like you said, your daughter's struggling with that. I actually do know that's a problem. I can tell you here in El Salvador, where we've got a pretty big tribe, that story has been changed. Like, parents down here are doing it differently than they do, you know, in Western countries like the United States. Like, it's a different mindset in a place like that. And I would tell you, I think this is a mindset problem, not really a financial one. And yeah, does that mean we have to live smaller? Does that mean you can't have three cars? Does that mean you can't have a big house? It might, you know, especially if you don't have a job where you can fiat farm and make a lot of money. But I think the job of having children and getting them through is the single most important job on the planet. And I think that when you do a half-assed job of it, that's why you get this, the stupid shit that we see on social media. While we see people, you know, taking hammers and in an airport and banging things, or why we see people from Africa going up and raping people in Sweden, or we think it's a good idea to put people in jail for tweets in the UK. This is bad brains in action in society. And if you want to really end the nonsense that we're seeing, how about you realize you take it at the root? And the root is when that baby's inside of you. And when that baby is being developed over the first 20 years of life, I think that just like a garden, if you want your garden to look nice, you have to tend to it. I believe the same thing is true with your family.
100%. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And it's a matter of priorities at the end of the day, right? Because to decentralize in the way you approach life is a reshifting of value systems and priorities, which is not always easy because it might mean losing family. It might mean losing comforts. It might mean losing the world as we know it, right? And when a reality shifts, it's pretty freaking scary. But why else are we here if not to evolve? So I had one more question for you. It's hard to surpass that, but I just want to jump to this. And it's something that comes up a lot. It's big in my world because I speak out a lot against surrogacy. And I know that that is a hot button issue for a lot of people because everybody deserves to have a baby, right? As if it's a commodity. But I view surrogacy as a form of child trafficking. And a lot of what I see on websites is that, you know, women are being sold, you know, for 30 grand up to 50 grand. You could make some extra money and you have no relationship to this baby, no biological relationship. They don't really talk about energetic or emotional very much, but they say, don't worry. Like you can go back to work and everything's fine as if it never happened. And now you can pay off your student loans or whatever it is, you know, just more self-enslavement talk. And so I've been doing a little bit of digging. And I've always known since I've been in the birth world that amniotic fluid is what forms the baby's cerebral spinal fluid. And after a certain juncture in the pregnancy, valves are closed and now the baby has its CSF supply. And so by virtue of that, wouldn't you say that the mother and the baby are tied on a cellular level, on an energetic level, through water, through electric, through energy?
Well, I'm going to tell you it's even more than that. I agree with you about surrogacy. I think it's a horrible idea. But I think mom and baby and dad are all quantum entangled. They're all entangled together. So I think that the relationship is strong. And I think when you realize what surrogacy really is, it breaks that whole entanglement phase. And do I believe that surrogacy is a function of low dopamine, low melatonin, bad society, bad civilization, broken money? Yes, I believe all of these things are why we have bad ideas like this. Mm-hmm. And do I think we need to actively push against it? Yes. But we also have to remember that at least in the United States, 50% of the country are low dopamine and low melatonin. They are not interested in our opinions on this. And I believe we have to get back to a point where if people make bad decisions, we need to make them pay for them. As long as they pay for them, I'm fine with it. That means if the kids have any problems, that's your issue. You decided to do this. That's where it goes. And same thing with the mental health side of this, with, you know, women who give their babies up, or women or men who do, you know, OnlyFans to make money, or, you know, you're going to have sex with 1,000 guys, you know, and develop the problem of microchimerism, which we haven't even talked about, but it's an issue. I just think that we need to eliminate this stuff from our environment. And the way you do it is, remember, you've probably heard, especially me and other podcasts, talk about incentives dictate outcomes. As long as we facilitate the bad behavior will continue to happen. When we remove the incentives for this kind of decision-making, it magically goes away. So I fundamentally think it comes down to the fact that we have broken money.
Yeah. And as doctor and neurosurgeon and man of the world, you would say that there is absolutely a relationship that's formed. Maybe you hit that at the beginning, but you cut out for a moment, so I didn't hear that there is a relationship that's formed between the fetus and the mother who's gestating, right? And you might say that if we'd look at trauma and attachment theory, that when that fetus who's been with that woman for 10 months is taken and given to someone else, even though it came from that someone else's egg, there is still a broken attachment that happens on a brain level with that child. I know that people say, well, as long as they're going to a good home and, you know, someone loves them, they'll never remember, they'll never know, we don't even need to tell them. But there's a great book called The Primal Wound. She talks about adoption. She says children have memories of gestation. These things come out, you know, through dreams, through meditation, through moments of, you know, emotional release. They'll remember, I came from somewhere else. And there's always this yearning to go back to the mother's source at some point. And so, you know, again, it goes back to what you're saying. We have broken money, bad money. We have this deficit. Vitamin D, of light, you know, we're breaking what you called in another podcast. It was like really beautiful what you said. It was poetic, just like there's this light tunnel, you know, and there's all these stops that we're making. And at the first stop, we're already screwed. So if we can restore that movement, then all of these things may very well start to dismantle, you know, and these beliefs that we can have these ultra disconnected human experiences and be okay on the other side, and it's not going to impact anyone, maybe that would fall away.
Mom and baby are designed to be quantum entangled, and quantum entanglement happens without any connection there. It's actually a molecular resonance. It begins even before conception, if you want to know the truth. And this is not, you know, a dominant belief in the paradigm, but you have to remember that the paradigm that exists today, they are trying to break up not only entanglement, but also the nuclear family, because it suits a greater narrative and ideology to kind of separate and control us. And I don't think that this mindset, that at least that I share with people, they really understand that it always comes back to broken money, but it does. And the thing is, when society is designed to keep you down, they're always going to give you other options that incentivize you to keep you down. And I think that's what you have to push against.
Well, I could keep chatting with you all day and ask you about microchimerism and all kinds of things. It's been such a pleasure to hang out with you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing everything that you do. Super inspiring. I feel inspired. And I'd love to know a little bit right now about what you're building in El Salvador. And if we can't get to El Salvador, what can we do here?
I think what you need to build is some of the things that we talked about in the podcast already. I think you need to rebuild your life so that it's decentralized. That means not only about your health, but also your wealth. I think if you do that, that's the cornerstone foundation of what a good life's all about. And if you know that you don't have good health and you don't have good wealth, that you're not ready to have babies. It's as simple as that. Fix those things and then get back on the path. The nice thing is there's always time to change the road you're on. But the thing is, make sure when you do make the change that you do it for the right reasons, that you're not coming from an area where you're struggling. So focus in on what matters. That's light, water, and magnetism. Optimize all of those before you make big decisions. You know, if, you know, you wind up having a mistake or an error in your life, doesn't mean you can't come back from it. It means that you need to do more to come back from it, not less, and not look for the easy way out. Because if you do, ultimately, not only will you pay a price and a toll, whether it be disease or a poor outcome from your child, or maybe a breakup in a marriage or a relationship, or, you know, disassociation from friends and family, those are the things that you need to work on first before you make the next big step about making your own family.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cruz. It's been a pleasure.